Hey everybody, Tim Evanicki here with The College Audition, back again with another episode of The College Audition Podcast. Today my special guest is Hank Stratton, Associate Professor, Division Head of Acting and Musical Theater, and Artistic Director of the Arizona Repertory Theater at the University of Arizona. Thanks so much for joining us, Hank.
Hey Tim, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think you win the award for the longest title that I've ever had to read. We're already 15 minutes into the podcast, and I've just finished introducing you.
Which is absolutely ridiculous and completely the hubris of my title.
Makes for big business cards.
Yeah, exactly.
We always like to get to know the person before the program. So if you could please walk us through a little bit about your training and illustrious career that has led you up to your time at Arizona.
Absolutely. It would be my pleasure. So I have, and I still am, a freelance actor and a director. I have been an actor my entire life. One of the things that I tell students is that I've looked at love from both sides now because I was in their shoes. I was applying to musical theater and acting programs. I've attended them. I've also had a professional career, and now I am shepherding young artists through training on this side of the lens, if you will. So I went to I derailed my literature degree at Yale University, much to my mother's heartbreak, and I ended up spending 4 years abroad at the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, where I hold my BFA in acting. After that, I went to New York City, and I got fairly lucky in television, so I bounced back and forth between New York and Los Angeles for almost the majority of my time before I fell into directing and teaching. I was very fortunate to have Brent Wagner from the University of Michigan as one of my great mentors, and he offered me a few opportunities at Michigan, which then put me on the radar at the University of Arizona, and they offered me this job, and I said no only because my daughter was finishing up high school at the time, and they said, well, we'll hold it for you. And so they held it for me for 2 years when I joined the faculty in 2016, and I became division head in 2019 and artistic director.
Wow.
So here we are.
So with all of those titles attached to you, what are your actual, when do the students actually encounter you as far as the coursework and things like that while they're there?
Sure. So, I mean, they're one of the first faces that they will meet on the, say, the audition trail, if we will. I attend every unified audition event. I'm lucky enough to be invited to a lot of master classes and seminars and things like that. I'm attending International Thespians this year, as we were talking about offline. But they will meet me right away. I take the freshmen through their acting sequence in the fall and the spring. So it's all the foundational work. One of the things that I think is important to bring up is that our school, and it sort of positions us very uniquely, is an acting musical theater cohort, meaning that we matriculate 16 acting and musical theater majors, and they travel together as a cohort, receiving the same core curriculum in acting and voice and movement for the actor for their entire 4 years together. Within that degree, they individualize and they specialize. But I am lucky enough to have all of the acting majors and all of the musical theater majors in one class, teaching them the principles of acting, text analysis, scene work, monologue work, focus, action before emotion, all that kind of stuff. So, because really, a musical theater degree is an acting degree, if you really want to get granular about it. So we teach the same principles in acting and text analysis that then they will then use and take advantage of when they are analyzing songs and, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. So they meet me right away.
Awesome. So as we'll transition now into speaking a little bit more in depth about the program, and you just mentioned a really cool the cohort idea. But I always put our guests on the spot a little bit and ask them before we start digging into the program to give me their elevator speech, their elevator pitch on their program. So 60 seconds or less. Why should a student be considering University of Arizona? I'm not timing you, but
I No, I know. I touched on it a little bit.
Yeah.
I always lead with the integrated nature of the program. We are also, one of the things that positions us uniquely in the 21st century is that we are the School of Theater, Film, and Television. So I think that we tend to attract the student that is interested in an acting degree focusing on musical theater, focusing on all disciplines. So our musical theater majors are also introduced to the principles of on-camera work early on in their sophomore year. In the fall of the sophomore year, they join an acting class that is co-convened with the directing majors in the BFA film school. Mm-hmm. And they're learning on their feet in front of two instructors, one acting instructor and one directing instructor, how to be on a set, how to analyze a script for television, how to act on camera right away. And I think that more and more of the careers that we're looking at, that certainly the students that I have encountered admire, are the ones that are interdisciplinary, the ones that are on stage and the ones that are on television. We're in the golden age of television, as we all know. Mm-hmm. And I think that any student that's interested in a musical theater career is also going to be interested in being on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and HBO Max and all of that too. So that's part of my, I know that the doors are closing and I'm having to press the button, really quickly, and we only have 10 floors to travel. But I also think that any student that is interested in an R1 university, a Research 1 university, and is interested in a conservatory style training program within that larger university context is going to be attracted to programs like the University of Arizona, the University of Michigan, Penn State, those kinds of peer institutions, Texas State certainly, that has, Division I football, Division I basketball, that has a world-class medical school. We're operating the Mars rover and the telescope, and we just landed on a meteor. I just found all of this out at graduation, by the way. There's this enormous interface with NASA here. I'm not saying that the musical theater majors are also STEM majors, but I am saying that this community has everything for the curious student. So we tend to attract a student that is interested in that liberal arts experience as well. And you can also make, it's like, this is such college recruitment 101, but you can make a big school small, but it's harder to make a small school big. So that's the reasons that I think somebody would want to come to Arizona. We also have all the musical theater and acting and none of the snow, FYI. I get very, very, very smug about our weather from about October until May, when it gets punishingly hot. But, somebody was just saying to me, well, it's really hot in Texas. The dad was saying to me, well, it's really hot in Texas during the summer, so I don't really think you have to apologize for that. But anyway, that's a little bit of my elevator speech.
I think we're well past the first floor at this point, but well done.
We've actually, like the Willy Wonka factory, we've jettisoned out.
I'm not sure that any other school has ever tried to pitch their musical theater program by saying that they're operating the Mars rover before. So I think that's a first for us as well.
It's like we're doing Hamilton on Mars next year. I'm totally teasing.
All right. So if I am a freshman, let's start with BFA acting. You oversee both, but for people who are interested in really diving deep into the musical theater program, we do have another episode for BFA musical theater. We'll touch on it a little bit today just because you are a division head, but let's concentrate a bit more on the BFA acting. I am a freshman BFA acting major heading to University of Arizona. What does my first year look like?
Your first year will look like taking Acting 1 and 2 with Professor Hank Stratton. You will also have the introduction to the principles of voice and movement that incorporates a lot of the beginning principles of the Kristen Linklater technique that you will be spending the next six semesters really learning that progression and learning that warm-up. We also employ elements of physical theater in your first year. So you will be doing Matier work, neutral mask work. You'll be doing animal work. These are all principles from the Jacques Lecoq School of Physical Theater that are really important. And it's just all about getting the the actor into the body and integrating that with the voice and the head and the heart, because it is one instrument that you're using. You will also be joining your musical theater colleagues. You will be completing some of your crew assignments. You'll be having some shop assignments, but you also have something that the musical theater majors do not have, and that is principles of dramatic structure. And that is when you learn how to analyze a text right away, you take a deep dive into that. It's one of, I think it's one of the best elements of the freshman year. And we have a marvelous couple of professors that teach that. That so much so that six of our actors this year, out of the principles of dramatic structures, they were also honor students, wrote their own original scenes that they then performed at the end of their freshman fall year. So that was really exciting. Yeah, so that's what the first year looks like. You also have right away in the fall semester, your performance opportunity is a showcase, a fall showcase that we pair the musical theater majors and the acting majors. The musical theater majors tend to do a review focusing on the life and the work of one composer or one idea. And the acting majors share the same evening and they present sometimes original work or focusing on a playwright or a particular theme. This year it was all very great curated scenes that the students did themselves. Our professor David Morden directed it, and it was all about anything from social justice to the things that they're fed up with and sick of right now, which is part of the great national conversation that we are having that's so important, right? And one of the reasons we send kids to college.
Right. So tell us, as a BFA acting student, during their 4 years there, is there a way to pepper in musical theater sides of thing? What if it's an actor who sings, or what if it's an actor who wants to take a dance class?
We actually have, and I will not embarrass him on a podcast and memorialize him, but we have an acting major right now that's a very strong singer, but wanted to really focus on acting. In his sophomore year, he played the narrator in Into the Woods. He joined the musical theater performance classes, and that's another advantage of coming to a school that has an integrated nature to its program, is that you can cross-train. You can take those classes. It's by instructor permission. The only thing that I can't provide for the acting major is private voice. That's something that is solely for the musical theater majors, but the acting majors are available to take the music theory classes. They are encouraged to, you have to take some dance as part of your degree. 2 units of dance are required, but it is very uncommon for most of our acting majors not to be in the musical theater styles classes that are taught here. And it's very unusual for the acting majors not to take more and take advantage of our nationally ranked dance school here at the University of Arizona as well.
So we'll talk more about the actual performance opportunities here in a second, but are acting majors allowed to audition for the musical theater performances?
They are allowed and they are encouraged. So at the beginning of the year, I guess we're talking about performance opportunities now, but beginning of the year, we hold an Arizona Repertory Theater Company call where if the acting majors would like to be considered for casting in the musicals, they are invited to sing. They are invited to sing the same repertoire as the musical theater majors are required to do. So that puts them into consideration and potentially on the callback lists for the musicals. A couple of years ago, we had an acting major. In fact, he's he's got a featured role in Top Gun Maverick. But he was just a terrific acting major. He's from, the Bay Area in California. And in his senior year, he decided to come in and sing. And we had no idea that he sang. I don't know why he was keeping this under a bushel. I suppose he was just too busy, sort of being in all the student films and acting and, the lead and Prove for Me and all of this. And all of a sudden we found out that he sang. So he actually played Lucas in the Addams Family that year. So it really does speak to the fact that if you are an acting major, you can be considered with equal weight for the musical theater the musical theater productions as well. I do caution that there are oftentimes, and I don't know if you've run into this, Tim, because you meet all the students out there, that there are students that have this idea, this fixed idea, that they should be a musical theater major and anything else is second best. I think that needs to be sort of adjusted in a way, because it's all really one acting degree. But I would hate for a student to arrive at somewhere like the University of Arizona as an acting major and feel disappointed that they weren't studying exclusively musical theater. There are only a few cases where I have talked to students on the recruitment trail, if you will, in that way. And I give them very clear advice about, it sounds like you want a musical theater degree and you should pursue a musical theater degree, but you can also make access of the musical theater performance classes here if that's a strength of yours, or if that's something that you would like to improve on. But we do try to, in the musical theater performance classes, it's very important that we maintain peer challenge for all of the students. So we're not going to put an acting major in there that's a beginning singer, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I encourage students to not pay attention to the name on the degree, to dig into the curriculum a little bit more and find a program that's going to challenge them in all the areas that they want to be challenged, or find a program that's going to allow them the flexibility to tailor either through electives or any freedom that they have to just be challenged in all of the ways. Patti LuPone has a BFA acting from Juilliard, and she's very squarely in the middle of the musical theater world in her career. So it's all about go ahead.
But I'm so sorry, but she is a perfect example. She is an actor first.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things that's so dazzling about Sutton Foster, I mean, yes, she can sing her face off and she's the nicest person that I've ever, ever, ever had dinner with, but she's also an actor first.
Yeah. Yeah. And another example I always give of let's not pay attention to the degree is Audra McDonald, a BM vocal performance from Juilliard that hasn't done an opera in quite some time. I heard about her a lot when I was there because I was the musical theater kid in the opera program. So teachers always brought her up to me. So.
And you know that, because Betsy Wolf is a great friend, and she's a great friend of the program, but she and Audra had the same voice teacher in Visalia, California. I don't know what was in the water at that time, but I mean, it's like, that is one good voice teacher.
Yeah, you go to Fresno, and her name is everywhere. There's a street named after her that I think the touring house is on. I went to teach at a high school there, and like, there's a big picture of her on the wall. She is royalty there. But yeah.
Yep.
I don't remember what we're talking about now. Let's go back. And you mentioned, I mentioned the beginning, and then you just touched on it again, the Arizona Repertory Theater. So tell us what that is exactly. Let's break that down.
Yeah, I think it's a real standout part of the program, because it is the professional laboratory that collaborates with the BFA and the MFA design and tech division here at the university as well. So what they did back before I got here, it was not my idea, but I am now the custodian and the artistic director of the Arizona Repertory Theater, is that they developed essentially a LORT theater right here on the campus of the University of Arizona. We operate by equity rules and equity contracts, and I mean, you know, the principles and the ideas of those contracts. And we produce like a regional theater. We also collaborate with the Arizona Theater Company, which is the actual Lord B Theater here in Tucson that also performs in Phoenix. And students have the opportunity to get equity membership candidacy points through internships there, either understudy assignments or main stage assignments. It's very unusual for any of our students not to be actually on the main stage, up to including playing Zanita Shin in The Music Man, or we had one of our students get her equity card in The Diary of Anne Frank. But at the Arizona Repertory Theater, you are guaranteed casting from your sophomore year all the way through your senior year. So you have a main stage assignment every single year. The sophomores tend to understudy in their first, in their fall semester, and then they're usually on stage in their spring semester. We just did High Fidelity, and the almost the entire male ensemble was our strong, strong musical theater freshman class. Mm. And also the female ensemble was our strong freshman. I'm sorry, not freshman, sophomore class. Mm. We keep the freshmen off the main stage in their first year for a couple of reasons. Number one, getting into the groove of college is challenging enough, but also we are trying to introduce new ways of working. And I find that when we throw them into a performance setting or a performance environment, they tend to fall back on old habits and sort of like reflexively go into performance mode when they are really, we're really challenging them and inviting them to work in a new way. And I think that after the first year, that starts to gel, that starts to set. And then that's when we introduce them to the professional laboratory and put them in front of the patrons and their peers.
So far we've mentioned that they have a freshman showcase. We have the main mm-hmm. stage at the Rep. Tell us about any other performance opportunities on campus. Are there student-led performances? Are there other things to do?
Yep, we have our guerrilla improv troupe, which is the Darwin Project, that meets three times a week in the spring. And it's a great, great launch to things like the Groundlings. We have one of our presidents of the Darwin Project, who's an acting major. He is now in the Sunday company of the Groundling Theater Company in Los Angeles, California. We also, right away, and this is something that is available to freshmen as well, right away I insist that the acting and the musical theater majors, the BFA students, all meet the thesis filmmakers from the junior and the senior year in the School of Film and Television. And we have a mixer where they all have an opportunity to meet one another and then get onto each other's casting radar. We had 7 freshmen in BFA senior thesis films this last year. And we're talking about lead roles in thesis films. And it's a marvelous way of starting to put together your digital calling card when you graduate, your reel. Mm. And that work culminates in a red carpet event down at the Fox Theater, downtown Tucson, at something we call I Dream in Widescreen. It's a huge, huge community event. Over 800 people attend this every year. And we also are uniquely positioned in terms of festivals. The thesis films were accepted into 48 festivals last year, including one of our, he was a freshman at the time. He's now a rising junior, but he won the best comedy performance at the Houston Comedy Festival when he was just a freshman. So
wow,
that's another one of the performance opportunities. There are opportunities for you to join glee clubs. There are opportunities for you to, there we have, it's not performance, but we have a lot of students that are involved in Greek life here, which is something that is harder to do at a conservatory because there is no Greek life, but that is of interest to a lot of our students. I'm trying to think of the other performance opportunities. There are student-led things. We have students come to me and say, are there student-directed projects or anything like that? There are a ton of them, especially through the Honors College and the Honors Thesis that we put together every year. If a student has the ambition and has the idea, I'm going to find the bandwidth to provide opportunity for that and the space to do that. Mm. One of our acting majors just wrote a five-hander and cast 5 of our female-identifying acting and musical theater students in it, and it was presented as an evening in one of our black boxes, and it was super, super, super exciting.
So you mentioned a lot now about opportunities for student films and things like that, and that was going to be one of my questions for you. As you mentioned, it's this film and television is a big part of the training in BFA acting. So can you expand on that a little bit more as to how much training they're getting as far as on-camera training during the
Sure. Program? Sure. I'll be really honest with you. It's one of the holes that I found when I first got here. I was like, oh, we seem to be training people really well for the stage, but what I was seeing was the industry trend that I think that we're all seeing. And I think the pandemic really shined a really strong light on this, is that some of the first jobs that our students are going to have are going to be on television. And we have to start training them for that. I don't know how to teach acting I don't want to sound poncy, but I don't know how to teach acting without the bones of physical theater and rich language and the classics. I don't know how to do that. I don't think that's honest theater training. I don't think that's honest film training. And the careers that I admire are, you know, some of the people that I went to school with, the Benedict Cumberbatches and Olivia Colman and all of those great, great, great theater actors that are now having enormous impact on film and television. But I noticed that there was a real need to start integrating our acting majors with the filmmakers, which is one of the reasons that we do that mixer at the beginning of the year. And then I was able to develop additional on-camera courses. We had one on-camera course, and I didn't think that was enough. So now we have two, and I hope to have a third by the time that some of the students that are out there listening to this are in their sophomore and in their junior year. So we now have two really rich and robust on-camera training opportunities in addition to the student films that are being produced independently and outside of the classroom.
So at the end of the 4 years for a senior showcase situation, or how does Arizona present their students to the industry at the end?
The industry. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we were doing pre-pandemic, not to talk about the pandemic too much, is that we were flying auditors here into Tucson, and we had a showcase weekend, which is a template that we may return to. In addition to what we found is that the connectivity via the digital showcase that we were forced to do, not forced, but we had the opportunity to put our showcase on film and distribute it through the Casting Society of America, Breakdown Services of America, and Playbill. We were reaching 3,500 people nationally and internationally, as opposed to the 30 or the 300 that we were meeting when we were doing them in major markets. So I think that it's going to be a combination thereof. But for now, I do know that moving forward, the digital showcase has proved extremely successful, and we film it very professionally. I'm really proud of it. It's living on our website now, and it's giving students digital assets when they graduate, so that when an agent is meeting them and says, oh, you know, can I see what you have done on film, they have that in addition to all the rest of the stuff that they have done with the film and television thesis filmmakers.
So you're essentially not only giving them that classic showcase that everyone hears about, but a reel too of sorts? Are they getting a reel?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yep. That's individual. Awesome. I give them individual assets. That's true for the musical theater majors and for the acting majors as well.
I was just going to say that if we switch to the other side real quick and talked about how much film the musical theater students are getting, is it comparable?
It's not only comparable, it's the same. So it's one of the things that I think so exciting. And one of our musical theater students, when we released Showcase, within 15 minutes of it happening, she had appointments with Los Angeles managers set up for, you know, the next week, because of just how successful she was on film. She was still going to end up moving to New York, but I thought it was really interesting that the musical theater major was getting so much attention from what we think of as the film capital. But that's the screen acting course in the senior year is required of the acting majors, but it's not required of the musical theater majors. I can't think of an instance where the musical theater majors have not taken it as an elective. The sophomore screen acting class that I have just created is a requirement of the acting and the musical theater majors. And also in Acting 7, which is the showcase, it's really where we button it all up and polish everybody and get them ready to matriculate into the professional world. There's a tremendous amount of cold reading and self-tape and audition technique that we teach in that as well. And so much of that is now on camera, because one of the very first things that's going to happen when they get out there is they're going to have to put themselves on tape for everything. And it's not just plays. It's now musicals. Mm-hmm. It's all pre-screens are all now self-taped. I don't think we're going back then. I don't see that happening. I'm seeing an awful lot of callbacks in person happening. Mm-hmm. With my students, but one of the great privileges of my job as well, and I kind of love this about the new digital era, is that my graduates can send me their self-tapes and we can work on them together, or I can FaceTime with them and I can coach them. I don't think there's a self-tape that one of our recent graduates, I don't think there's a self-tape he submitted that he has not sent me and said, do you have any notes, or is the framing okay, or is the size too big, or, you know, it's one of the great blessings of my job is that I get to be your manager after you graduate.
And they're so fortunate because your resume on television and films is incredible. And that's something that a lot of programs don't have. So that's very fortunate for them.
I do like to be able to provide that professional bridge and, you know, my own experience that I bring it into the classroom.
Yeah. I think the first thing I ever saw you in was actually, it was very funny.
Uh-oh.
I think we had just spoken probably 4 years ago when we just met, and I just had reached out to you about coming to conservatory. It was either later that day or the next morning when I was getting ready. You were on my television. Unsaved by the Bell.
Of course. My daughter has a huge joke about how we'll be boarding planes and people will go, I know you. And then she'll just roll her eyes. And it's usually, that was an iconic episode. I made a BuzzFeed, you know, top 10, you know, guest stars.
Oh.
For that. And it is oft ridiculed, or should I say that they pay tribute to me in the freshman and sophomore year when they find out that I was on Saved by the Bell.
Well, freshman and sophomores now, though, wasn't that, I mean, the late 80s that you were
right. But I mean, it was in the like late 80s, early 90s. I can't, it was one of my very first jobs on TV. I was just out of drama school myself. And, but these, I had no idea that these kids are still watching it on in syndication. Cause I get
streaming, I think,
residuals for it all the time. Oh, and streaming. And it's just, it's sort of iconic. It's, and now I think it's a little camp. Then it was sort of like fun.
Have you seen any of did you watch any of the new version of the Saved by the Bell, that like the current one where they're all working at a school? I'm not going to say anything bad about it, but meh.
But in the last couple of years, I've done, I think, three nostalgia podcasts and one video, you know, sort of show about Saved by the Bell. And Beverly Hills 90210 is another one that people like to talk about. I did all those shows back then, you know, back when I had, you know, smoother skin.
I watched it and thought I was going to be like, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to love it. And it just made me feel old because I'm like, oh, they're the adults
exactly.
now. Like, these kids are the adult. No, I don't want this.
No. I ran into Mario Lopez about 10 years ago when he was doing Extra. And he was filming at the Grove in Los Angeles. I still lived in Los Angeles at the time. And he's such a nice guy. He ran all the way across the lawn, gave me a big hug. Because that episode was sort of watershed for them. Peter Engel says that he sort of found his tone with that particular episode. I don't know why that was such an important one. But they used to show that episode to every director that was going to direct Saved by the Bell and say, make it like that.
Wow.
And, you know, so... anyway, I still get money for it.
As you well should.
And now I'm teaching Shakespeare at a college level.
Right. All right, let's get back to University of Arizona. Tell us about campus life. Tell us about Tucson, what students are able to do out in the community. Eventually they do want to leave the gates of the campus and do things. So tell us what that's like.
They do. You know, it's a great town, and it just received some sort of distinction in the New York Times as the city of gastronomy. We have Top Chef here this week filming their final episode. I had no idea, but we are, I'll talk about the food because it's incredible. We have, Danny knows the statistic. He probably shared it on his podcast, but we have the longest, if you stacked up all the authentic Mexican restaurants in one road, it's the longest mileage of authentic Mexican food anywhere in the world. So we have great food. We have great, one of the things that really moves me about Tucson and the Southwest, actually, the Sonoran Desert, is the incredible geography and the incredible light here. It's actually unrivaled anywhere, and the beautiful red rocks and the sunsets. And so we have a tremendous amount of interest in that. So our students are hiking, they're camping. We had four sophomores take over the Christmas break, or the winter break, as opposed to going home. They all went through Utah and the Grand Canyon, and it was amazing. So that's stuff that's available to you that you can't really do if you're going to school in the cold, areas of Pittsburgh and Ohio. I have nothing against the cold areas of Pittsburgh and Ohio. So they're doing that. There's a tremendous amount of music here. There's a real music scene. There's a real art scene. The other thing about the College of Fine Arts is that the students are all friends. They're meeting in the dorm that has a fine arts tour. I just pointed towards the dorm that's right behind me, but they're all meeting the dance majors and the music majors, and they're finding community there, and they're performing in, the music scene, or they're putting together dance pieces and filming them. It's a really cool arts community that's on campus and then has its life outside of campus too. The Broadway Touring House here at Centennial Hall has all the first run tours. They all come through. So whenever there are friends that are doing things, for instance, Cynthia Westfall is right now in soundcheck for Come From Away. She's a friend of mine from Michigan, and she, if we were in class right now, she'd be coming in for a master class or a Q&A at least. We've had just tons of people come in and do that. Our students just sang with Kristen Chenoweth, who is an old friend of ours, and she was here at the Fox Theater, and so we had 10 musical theater freshmen sing with her in 2019. And Mary Mitchell Campbell reached out to me again and said, "I loved it so much, let's do it again." So we did that again just a couple of weeks ago. So there's just a lot to do here in Tucson.
Wonderful. All right, let's switch gears and again and talk about the audition process. Again, we have another
Yes.
episode that's talking about BFA musical theater, so let's concentrate on the acting folks.
Sure.
First question I ask everyone, do you pre-screen?
We do.
And
And we use the common pre-screen.
great. How many pre-screens do you see normally?
Normally,
What is
when I
normal
first got
anymore?
here, Tim, we had a yes. What is normal anymore? When I first got here, I'm proud of the visibility that the University of Arizona has. We had a few hundred audition, and now I think that pre-pandemic, just the year before this last one, we had 1,200 pre-screens that we looked at, and I called back 350 students.
Is that, again, that's just BFA acting? That's
That's
everything.
BFA acting and musical
So that's
theater.
both, right?
Yeah,
If a student is
so that's
applying,
both.
if a student is applying musical theater, do they ever get redirected to acting?
They do. Sometimes I have very direct conversations with them, or very often those that are straddling both degrees or know that that is an interest in both, they just on the application they check, "Please consider me for both," and we will either call them back for one or the other, or we will often call them back for
Great.
both degrees.
And those live auditions that you see, where do you hold those? Where do you see students?
We see students. We have four on-campus dates. We also are recognizing the need for access and the opportunities that the digital auditions that we held for almost exclusively for 2 years provided for us. So we will have at least one virtual audition, but we also attend the Unified events in Chicago. We were there for 4 days this last year, and we spend 1 day at the Unified in Los Angeles. The only Unified that we do not do is New York.
New York. Okay.
And it's just a matter of bandwidth. I just simply don't have time.
Sure. Tell us from those you said 350 live auditions, correct? Tell us from those how many offers you're generally making to end for what size class? You already mentioned the size class. So tell us how many offers you're generally making to get to that number.
Yeah, so anytime that we make offers, we work very hard to make them genuine and honest first rounds. So I don't like to offer big in order to matriculate the 16. I think that's slightly unfair to the student. But we are aiming for, and we'll never go over a class of 18, and that's a combined acting musical theater cohort. So we're making, this last year we made 22 first round offers, and we were able to matriculate a class of 16.
So there's no,
we had,
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say there was a lot of waitlist movement. I think this last year was very strange, and I'm sure you experienced this too.
Crazy.
You're one of our partners, and so you know how it was just very crazy. All of a sudden, at the end of April, we were making these waitlist offers because pieces started to move around. But we're really, really pleased with the diversity of class that we have, and that we were able to maintain a size of 16 and a really high quality as well of student.
Is there a predetermined number, 8 actors, 8 musical theater students, or is there a way that you break that down?
No, there's no magical number. We try to make sure that there's real peer challenge throughout both degrees. And it really varies. I mean, this year, I think we matriculated more musical theater female identifying actors than we did any other particular demographic because of who we saw. But we do try to evenly split that just so that there's a weight and a balance. But in terms of the class, the acting majors tend to make up about 7 or 8 of those, and the rest are musical theater majors because of the size of the plays that we're doing in terms of the musicals. The musicals just have a bigger casting requirement.
You read my mind on my next question and partially answered it, but I'm going to ask it more directly just so we get a clear answer, because I actually get this question a lot, or I think this is an assumption that a lot of parents have, usually because they hear it in the parent groups or whatever on social media. But how much does racial and ethnic diversity, gender, play into your final decisions as far as how that class is broken down?
Well, what I think that what we aim for and what we should be doing is trying to represent the community and the community that they will be working in. So a diverse community in terms of identity, whatever that is, if it's racial identity, sexual identity, gender identity, is really important to us because that's the world that we're living in right now. And I'm very interested in them having that peer support and that peer community. So all of that, I mean, I think it would be dishonest and a disservice to anybody to say, oh, well, you know, like that's when programs can start to tokenize, which I think is really gross and unfair and actually counterintuitive to all the EDI initiatives that we have right now. And mm-hmm. EDI is top of mind for us. I mean, one of the things that the pandemic also provided us was a real honest look at were we representing how we wanted the art that we make to be reflected in the professional workplace that these students are going to be matriculating into. We had an internal audit. Professor Kaya Dunn from North Carolina came in and was really, really helpful in helping us take a curricular and a cultural audit of what was happening, and that happened for a year long. Out of that was a dramatic literature course, which is specifically designed to address not only just diversity and identity, but anti-racism in theater. So that's the real focus of it. It's called Anti-Racism in Theater, and it's a dramatic literature course that I'm hoping will be required curriculum by the time next catalog comes out. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that the question that I get more often than not is, you know, the students that are coming to me saying that I have a Caucasian blonde female. So even though they're accepting 8 students in musical theater, does that actually mean she's only up for 2 possible spots because they're split then male-female, and then they want to make sure they have a racial and ethnically diverse program as well? Does that limit the number of spots available to a student that may think that there are more of their particular
type? And I think that that's a genuine anxiety I've heard it as well, and I think that it's supported in some of the ways that we are, you know, that we're seeing things shake down. But I can promise you that we are looking at everybody through a lens of excellence first. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that excellence is top of mind as well, but it, mm-hmm. having a representative class is also very important to us as well. I mean, I've got all kinds in the incoming class. I've got all kinds of identity, and I'm very excited about it. That's also true of the sophomore and the freshman class, and certainly of the graduating class from last year and the senior class and all of that. So I don't know. It sounds like am I answering your question?
You are answering the question. It's an awkward question, and I've asked it to the last few episodes that we've had, because it may just be fresh in my mind, because of course all of, you know, we're within a month of all the decisions coming out, and students not always hearing the answers that they want to hear as results of their auditions. So everyone is always, of course, looking for a reason why, and looking for a reason to explain why they didn't get into that school or why it wasn't offered to them. And that's one of the things that pop up often is, well, you know, I have a, you know, it, there's just more girls, or, you know, they're this particular school, and as crass as it sounds, just isn't accepting as many Caucasian students anymore, or something like that. And it may be inappropriate for me to even be saying that, but these are the things that I'm hearing. And the purpose of this podcast is to hear the answers from the actual people and to get it right from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So I've started asking those questions just so that we can dispel those rumors a bit and understand that, you know, sometimes the answers as to why you didn't get in can't necessarily be explained or be broken down into zeros and ones.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that any artist is going to encounter in the professional world as well. I've encountered it myself, where it didn't make any sense why I didn't get that one part, but it's all about alchemy, and it's all about the community and the ensemble that somebody is putting together. And there is also, and I'm sure you impart this to your students because I've heard you say it, there is no one path to being an artist in this world. There are the universities of Arizona and all of the peer institutions like us, but that is not the one way that you have to follow in order to be successful in this business. There are all kinds of different paths and all kinds of different journeys.
Great. Well, Hank, tell us, if students want to get to know more about Arizona, where should they go to get that information?
They should visit our website at tftv.arizona.edu, scroll down and click on Acting Musical Theater. I also invite you to our Instagram page, which is at @UArizonaActingMT. You can follow us on Facebook at the same handle as well. They are also welcome to reach out to me via email. It is my name @arizona.edu, hstratton@arizona.edu. And if I don't have the answer to their question, I will certainly send it somewhere.
Awesome.
But we pride ourselves on being very accessible to our students and to prospective students as well.
Great. Well, Hank, I will see you in just a couple of weeks at the International Thespian Festival, and then again a couple of weeks after that at our conservatory in Orlando. And we always love having you around here. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
All right. Bye-bye.
For more information on the exciting training workshops and masterclasses offered by The College Audition, please visit us online at www.thecollegeaudition.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.